podcast brought to you by the Triad Network. This podcast is designed to share trending topics occurring within the world and our communities and bring them a behavioral and mental health perspective.
Welcome to Behavior Health Today, a Triad production. I'm your host, Dr. Graham Taylor. In today's episode, we will resume our conversation with Jerry Barone from Effective School Solutions. In our last episode, we discussed the prevalence rates of mental health issues in our youth and the warning signs that parents and teachers can be aware of as we monitor students' transitions. We also looked at the ways our schools can prepare to address our children's needs as they enter back into the fall semester. We'll resume our talk today by addressing self-care specific to teachers and administrators. I work with several teachers right now, principal, and people don't fully appreciate, I don't think, the demands on our educational professionals out there and the level of commitment that they're bringing to this. It's been a very stressful time for them as well. You know, we're talking about the signs and symptoms of various things and the prevalence rates for, you know, kids and anxiety, depression, all those things. But, you know, teachers are people too, if you will. And they've got their own lives that they're coming back, they're putting on hold and coming into the classroom as present as they possibly can. What are you seeing some of the administrations, some of the teachers exhibiting in terms of just their own mental health and how you guys are helping them with their own self-care?
Yeah. You know, look, it's actually the same exact signs and symptoms.
It is, isn't it?
Right. It's the same things. And we did a presentation for superintendents. Again, we were asked by a district to, it was a group of superintendents. And I didn't do the presentation. One of our great clinical leaders in ESS did it. But I happened to be there and helped develop some of the content. It was really great because I think for superintendents, they don't get a chance to say that, like, I'm suffering with this stuff too. They're always supposed to be in a leadership role. So having them together in a homogeneous kind of setting is good because you wouldn't want to mix that group with others because they wouldn't feel comfortable. But just to be able to get to them and show them about the importance of self-care, the importance of you taking care of yourself every day, setting time aside, not feeling, you know, accepting, you know, like a distress tolerance, accepting the reality, embracing the reality that you can't control many things and that it's okay to be that way. It's okay not to have all the answers. Of course, that might go contrary to the thinking of many superintendents, and I understand why, you know, they're in a serious role, but if you don't take care of yourself, you're going have the same anxiety and depression that others have as well. And in the end, I think when you take care of yourself, you become so much more in tune to listening. You know, if you really practice mindfulness, it's about being alert. Opposite. You know, it's not about going into a space where, you know, you're tuning everything out. It's about tuning in.
It really heightens awareness, doesn't it, for yourself and others. It makes your radar even bigger.
It makes you less distracted. So continuing with what you were saying about that you work with teachers and you work with schools, you know, we like to start the self-care portion with a nice two-hour lecture to everybody who wants to join. We usually try to pick, like, you know, voluntary. So you don't want to force people. But 25 is a really nice number. Everybody in the group gets self-care 2 hours. Videos of that. And I'm not saying you have to do this with ESS, but if you wanted to do this, if a district wanted to do this themselves. So start with a nice self-care piece and then meet every month to talk about some other really key aspects of self-care. And, you know, we would just pick off a number of different things that we think are important. And I mentioned them already about stress tolerance, emotion regulation, building resiliency, and radical acceptance. You know, some of the key things that you talk about when you're doing mindfulness stuff. And I think, again, we talked about confidence before, right? So what builds confidence? Let's take if you're a sports team, right? So what builds confidence? Well, really great practices, right? So I go into a game, I feel confident. I'm excited. You know, I might be a little bit anxious about what's going to happen, but I'm not feeling like I'm not ready. I think the same is true when people are practicing these skills. They're feeling like, hey, I've done the work. Yeah. If something comes up, not going to be pleasant, but I know what to do. And that's I fall into my routines. I fall into my structure. And in the end, that's what rules the day.
what I really like about that piece, and I think it's part of the self-care for the staff that you're talking about, you know, confidence is something that we have to earn. And if we reverse engineer that, we recognize that in order to have confidence, you have to develop a competence for something. And to have a competence, you have to develop a mastery. And if you want to develop a mastery, you have to do right things repeatedly. And what you're talking about is you're laying out for folks, these are some of the right things we can do for kids, for the administration, for teachers, for the district. These are right things we can do. We can do them repeatedly. And over time, we develop a mastery in these things and then a competence in these things. Then we get to walk into those environments with the confidence that we want folks that are educating our students and we want our students walking out with is a confidence that they can do these things in effective ways. And that's what I love about your program. In fact, I want to go into just a little bit more because I so appreciate the very practical yet very effective strategies that ESS provides. I know there's some things like, you know, take your own pulse and that I'd love to have you share that teachers and administrators might consider doing as they prepare for and navigate through the school year, because I want our listeners to kind of pick up on this and then maybe go research them further after our show. But give us some of the strategies that you guys talk about.
Yeah, and you might find some of these in one of our professional development workshops, depending on which one we're doing. But I did pull a few things for us to kind of like think about. One of them is strategy one is take your own pulse, right? So it's like find your calm, right? If you're in a class, you need to find your calm, right? And it's natural to be upset with students and how they behave, but practice your own regulation with students. It really goes really far. I know right now I'm working for a CEO that is just like so calm and so, you know, always there that, you know, that it really creates all of this great stuff that you're not always lucky enough to have that. But, you know, I happen to have a boss right now that is that way. And I can't tell you how much that leaves me feeling like anything is solvable. And I think when kids see that with their own teaching staff,
you bet,
with their own teachers or adults in their lives, that that matters. But it's a tool. This is not gratuitous. You know, teachers should be learning these skills, not just for themselves, the tool to be used in the classroom. We know from social emotional learning that kids learn best in a safe, competent environment. All kids learn best in a safe, competent environment. That includes equity as well. You know, so I think strategy one, taking your own pulse. I know, you know, as a clinician, you know, there was a time where I was running an outpatient rehab for teenagers. And certainly there was a fair amount of anxiety I might be feeling knowing that we're going to have about 20 to 50 kids coming in. I wasn't running, you know, we would have like 5-6 people running different groups. But before I started my group, I was definitely tuning into me. So I did not want that to end. And the other strategy we talked before about routines, and then we talked about structure, the importance of routines for parents with their kids, for individuals, you know, with themselves, is make sure you have your routines and make sure you have your structure. It's something that we really scrambled to create. You know, we did a webinar last year and it was you have a chat box in your webinars, and someone wrote back that they were working with students that were autistic and that they suggested to the parent, even though it was all virtual learning, that they get in the car with their kid, drive around the block like they were going to school, park the vehicle, walk back into the house and start the day. And I was like, that is brilliant. That is so, you know, good. And this came from an audience member. It wasn't like, you know, it didn't come from us. You know, I mean, maybe somebody within ESS thought about it, but that's like a really cool example of, now, you know, we're not going to, you know, we don't necessarily have to do that if you're an adult. But the point of routines, I know for myself, certainly exercise and eating right, taking care of myself and giving myself the time I need it was, and it wasn't easy during the pandemic, was very, very important. We look at, and I love this one, another strategy is validation. We don't always have to make things better. And sometimes, you know, there's this thing in dialectical behavioral therapy called irreverent, right? And I know when I first learned about irreverence, I was like, I love that because I am really good at being irreverent, like really saying, hey, Graham, that really sucks.
Right. That's awful. That's just awful.
Like, I can't believe they did that, right?
Right.
Validation is so important, but again, it's a tool. It's a tool. Now, you have to be genuine when you use it, but validation is not saying, well, it's not so bad. It's like saying, yeah, it really does suck. Yeah. And it sucked for us, for a lot of us, you know, have really struggled with this. And that kind of genuine validation, a little bit different than maybe a reverence, is so real, because it's saying like, you're right. You're so right, you know, but there's also things that we can do to try to help you with that.
Yeah, and I think sometimes folks are afraid to kind of to name not just the obvious, but to name the truth, this idea that I can normalize that that was really awful, that was really difficult. Our fear is if we do that, we're going to put ourselves in such a hole, we're never going to be able to get out. But the opposite is true. And we validate it the way you're describing. It actually normalizes it. There's kind of a universality around that, and it allows us to come back out and say, well, okay, that was tough. Now, what are we going to do? Kind of naming it, putting the coin in that slot kind of frees us up in a way to then come back and not just have our emotions and our thoughts and our experiences validated, but then see how we're going to rise out of this. So I love that validation piece.
Yeah, I remember I mentioned before that I had worked in substance abuse for years, many years with kids. And at one time I had a psychologist who I loved, was a supervisor in group with me, and she used to come, you know, pretty regularly. And I remember her saying in a group, yeah, it really stinks to be, you know, 16 years old and not being able to use with your friends, and because you've got this disease. And I remember thinking, wow, how freeing that was. It was certainly worth crying over. And I don't think the student or the kid wanted to necessarily hear that, but it was very real, and it really put reality in place. But at the same time, it frees you up to not be anxious about it anymore, but to kind of move on in some ways.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor.
Behavioral and mental health professionals provide critical support to our communities in a time when our communities need it more than ever. But they need support too, to continue their education, to connect with colleagues, and to advance their career. And so we've launched Triad, the hub for behavioral and mental health professionals. At Triad, you'll find education, community, and career resources for both current and aspiring behavioral and mental health professionals, all curated specifically for you and all for free. Visit us at hellotriad.com/BHT to register for your free professional account. Again, that's hellotriad.com/BHT. Come join the community today.
I think in many ways, people do want it to be named. They wanted to say, oh, you get it.
Yes.
You know what I'm going through. And I appreciate that, you know, it might be different for you in your unique ways, but when you name it like that, you see me in a way that most don't. You don't have to, you're not trying to put some rose colored glasses around it or a white picket fence. You're saying this is awful and how hard this must be. And not that we're going to get stuck there, but that kind of begins to free us up. So I think those points, the routine, the structure that provides predictability, you know, and certainty for kids, and this validation where we name it and we kind of move through it. You know, what I'd like to do right now is I'd like to pan out a bit and to discuss what you feel school districts themselves can be doing to address mental health. And I know you folks refer to, or you have what you refer to as an MTSS framework for helping schools with mental health interventions. Would you explain this MTSS framework and how it can be implemented within a school district?
Response to Intervention, or RTI, was a thing that first was probably going on in schools. And it was a response to probably overclassification of students in special ed. So they wanted to come up with, you know, the Department of Education wanted to come up with some standards for response to intervention, meaning, can we have a continuum of intervention? We can prevent students from just ending up in special ed, because classification for special ed, although extremely valuable for the student that needs it, if you could prevent it in some way with other earlier interventions, that would be wonderful, right? So that was the first thing that came out. And then more recently, but it's been out for quite some time, multi-tier systems of support is what MTSS refers to. And it's a more comprehensive approach that has been further developed in recent years. It emphasizes multiple levels of instruction for all learners. But it also focuses on practices, policies, and programs that are aligned. And it really looks, it includes, behavioral, social, and emotional support, which is fabulous. Not that RTI didn't. I think RTM might have, you know, embraced it a bit. MTSS really embraces it. And it's more for the whole child. And I would say whole community. It's not just about the kids. It should be about the teachers. It should be about parents. You know, when you're doing professional development, we talked about capacity building before. It should include training and professional development for parents. You want parents to know as much as they know as possible. So that's the way we look at MTSS. And it's pretty clear that that is what it is. And within that framework, tier two and tier three, and there's actually a lower level tier, which is really more on strategic planning. We're encouraging school districts to look at what they have and to try to fill in those gaps. And there's so many things that they could do. But, you know, just, you know, most schools by now hopefully have planned for the upcoming year and are not getting caught flat-footed here. But some things that they could do would start with a needs assessment. You know, evaluate your levels of intervention. Look at, you know, what you have in terms of professional learning for your teachers or your parents. Look at your CLs. Look at psychoeducation and look at your programs. What do they have? What do we want to create? And then I think if you want to then start getting into the tier, consider comprehensive mental health professional development initiatives that are year long, that are not just one and done kinds of things. Think about coaching. Think about parent interventions. Think about psychoeducation in the classroom, you know, along with SELs. You know, things that we talked before about the self-care series for parents. I mean, obviously, that would be great for kids, right? To learn more about taking care of themselves, learning more about mindfulness practices, depending on the age group. But you can do it with all age groups. You would just have to modify it. Think about things like that. And of course, DEI. I mean, anything that's trauma related, even though the word is overused. But I do think if we're going to bring trauma into the classroom and create well-regulated classrooms, that's very important. And you're not bringing in trauma. You're bringing in a knowledge and an understanding of trauma and how it might impact students and what it might look like in your classroom so you can quickly regulate that student. They should do the work. You should just be aware of it. You know, at the tier two level, I think we mentioned it before that, you know, I think what schools are going to be looking at is, you know, probably an increase in students needing mental health services at a lower level. And you can create short-term interventions, use your counseling staff wisely. You should have leadership in the building that tries to keep kids in a least restrictive intervention, you know, without funneling students to, hey, we have this program and it really works. And now everyone's getting funneled there. And it's like, yeah, but maybe 60% of those kids don't need that. You try to keep them in a least restrictive environment. And then you want to look at your crisis assessments. I think school districts in general do a pretty good job with identifying a crisis and sending students to a proper evaluation, like I'm going to hurt myself. But it's that follow-up that is so essential. So, okay, I thought about suicide. I was identified by the school. I was sent out for an emergency room evaluation. Now I'm back in school the next day, right? So what were the recommendations from the place that you went to? Are you going to follow them? Are we going to keep your parents engaged so we can help them follow through? Those are big, that's a big area, crisis assessment area that you could do a lot with in terms of re-entry post the crisis. And then I think for tier three, and this is your programs, if districts them. You really just want to make sure that they have some specialty with the kind of things that you're going to see around bereavement and anger and trauma and certainly school avoidance. I mean, those are the things to fill in. And I'm making it sound like it might be easier, but I think if you come in with a committee of folks and you say, oh, this person's got an expertise in you know, a trauma. Let's use them. You know, I mean, you could start, you know, chopping wood and getting some of these things done. But, you know, of course, ESS provides many of these things at any level and in any size. I mean, we've done projects that are very small, and we've done, you know, gigantic projects. So really happy to help.
Yeah. I would love, maybe I'm going to kind of tease our listeners here. I would love to come back and talk about some of these series you're talking about regarding self-care for, you know, for the children in our schools, for the teachers themselves, administrators, even for the parents, because we're talking about these kinds of series being primary and secondary interventions. We're trying to get out in front of it, you know. And I would love for them to hear some of the very usable and very practical approaches that you guys teach. Maybe we can kind of just, you know, flag that for down the road together, coming back and
We can get into the weeds a little bit with that.
I would like that. Yeah, I would very much like to get in the weeds around that, let people know what they can have access to and how they can really enhance what they're working hard at right now and what they're doing. You know, I know we're kind of coming into the home stretch here, and I would like very much for you just to share some resources that you have, both for some folks, for things for people to call, and also to follow up with you folks at ESS as well. So give us some resources you'd like us to follow up on, would you please?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is something that's, public service announcement and many of the presentations we do. So SAMHSA, National Organization, Disaster Stress Helpline. The phone number there is 1-800-985-5990. Distress Helpline. Very good. There's also a texting one called Talk With Us. All one word, Talk With Us, 266-746. There's also the crisis text line by texting Talk 741-741. Of course, there's the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. That's at 1-800-273-TALK, T-A-L-K. And then make a list of your own local resources, you know, for people that are listening, hotlines and warm lines in crisis response. We see for school districts to give to their kids. And of course, Effective School Solutions, if you go to our website, you're going to see a ton of great stuff. I would point you to the thought leadership section. There are articles, there are mindfulness moments. There's many, many things that we put out that is for the community that we love putting out. I mean, we put out an article a month. We put out solution briefs on a regular basis. The one we're doing this month, we're just had an editorial meeting for it. It's going to be on school avoidance. That's a great article on what to do with school avoidance. So very, very helpful, I think, to districts or to parents.
That's really good. So Effective School Solutions, I think you guys have really properly named your program. It is phenomenal, and it is so well thought out, and it is comprehensive. It's so practical in its ability to be implemented and so helpful in so many areas. So well done, and congratulations on your guys' success.
Thank you so much, Graham. And it's a pleasure to, you know, work with someone who gets it, and to also be able to get the word out. Folks, not so much about ESS, but about mental health, the epidemic that we're facing, and that we can and will do something about it.
Absolutely. Well, I sure appreciate you being with us today, and look forward to having you back to talk about some of these series that we're kind of teeing up here. So we'll look forward to seeing you next time.
My pleasure. Thanks, Graham.
And I want to thank our listeners too. We always appreciate you dropping by to join us. Thanks for doing so. And we'll look forward to having you join us next time on Behavior Health Today.
We appreciate all the support from our community, and if you like our show, one of the best ways you can support it is by giving us a 5-star rating and leaving a review. Behavioral Health Today is a podcast part of the Tribe Network, all rights reserved.